Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Now we're going to meet the first student admitted to the UMKC Conservatory's composition program, listing the computer as his musical instrument. Tim Hart, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gina.
Talk to me about your relationship with music. Did it start with the computer or did it evolve to being a computer-based thing?
It evolved into being a computer-based thing, but I think it took time for me to recognize that I was even using a computer at all.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it was always in the background. For a long time, it was the cheapest way for me to be able to record. I mean, I remember back in the late 90s, I was using Real Audio to record and running like a long stereo cable from one room to the next and just, yeah, dumping everything on there because I couldn't afford tapes.
So were you thinking of it as like a stand-in tool for a time before you were seeing it as, wait, no, this is what I use. This is my instrument.
Kind of. I mean, there was all kinds of things that I was learning about as I was using the computer but not recognizing them as being an instrument, because the whole time I was like chopping up whatever I was working on and editing and splicing and turning one instrument into something else using the computer. But I just didn't recognize that that was something that could be like a viable instrument.
Let's back up and get to this stage. I mean, what's your musical background like?
All kinds of stuff. I mean, when I was in high school, I played in a rock and roll band and, you know, bass guitaring and regular guitaring and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the ideas that I had didn't really like fit into that. So I started working with a variety of different instruments. So I guess, yeah, I started with rock and roll and, you know, turned to these other things.
Can you tell me about some of the ideas that didn't fit into rock and roll bands?
Well, I remember one of the first things that I ever did was I started listening to John Cage. And I mean, that probably ruined a lot of people's lives too. But for me, for sure, I was taking all these like prepared piano pieces that he did, putting them on tape, and then trying to get the band to like incorporate that in, you know, hit play and go for it.
So for people who don't know about John Cage, I mean, he would put like nuts and bolts and things on the strings and pianos. I mean,
yeah, prepared piano. That's, yeah, exactly.
So how do you think the computer changed things for you as you're this person who's trying to really post hearing John Cage, trying to experiment, it sounds like, not just with where you get your sounds, but also with how to manipulate the thing that generates the sound. That's what the prepared piano is.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, I think it put a lot of ideas into my head about the freedom of being a musician, but also being a composer, because a lot of those pieces that I appreciated by him were either solo pieces or things that were just like found in, you know, outdoors.
So I want to hear some of your music shortly, but how would you describe your sound before we do?
Wow. I mean, I guess it's like every year there's a new sound or something, you know, it's constantly changing. But if you're going to be playing some of the things that I think you're going to be playing, then there are a variety of different hacked, I guess you could say, toys, video game machines that I process through the computer or control using the computer is a better way to put it.
So would you say that it sounds like play?
I hope so.
Okay, let's hear some music by Tim Hart.
I can't wait to hear which one.
This is Signs. Tim, when we hear a piece of music on a piano, for example, most of us can picture what the musician's doing to make the sounds we hear. Their fingers on black and white keys, and when they pound on those, a sound comes out. What would be the analogy here? I mean, how are these sounds made?
I really like that song as an example. It wasn't the one I was expecting, but that one was really funny because I was trying to come up with a way to really, really use the computer to do what I wanted to. So I had an idea of a piece or a sound slowing down and then speeding up. And so I set a series of limits on a set of sine waves, and then...
So it's a sine, like S-I-N-E.
Yes, a sine wave, yes. And basically, I hit play, and it output everything, all those sounds you hear right there, into about 11 seconds. The whole song itself is probably about 8 or 9 minutes, if I remember right. But it output it all into about 11 seconds, and then I had to kind of like shape it and temper it to be able to do what I wanted to. So really, that was just kind of a raw data in the beginning.
Well, that's interesting, because it sounds like what makes this sound is math.
It's a lot of it is. With that one too, there's actually, I mean, you, if you think about that one, the way that I think about it, there's actually three instruments, and one of them is represents the spectrum of sound. So it starts from a fundamental pitch. I think it was like B flat with that one, and then it sends out a series of other sine waves that are generated as smaller segments of that B flat, in each segment being a different note. So in that way, it is math. And then there's two other instruments which are also composed of sine waves. One of them is like a natural tuning that we're used to, and then another one is just a quarter tone higher than that. And there's all kinds of different shaping. And yeah.
You're referring to tuning and tones as instruments. I mean, as things we're used to. But I think for people who have never programmed music on a computer, or who have never programmed on a computer, period, this is all still really abstract. I mean, how would the process you just described compare to... I mean, I don't know if you're able to answer this, but like if you were composing for, say, a piano and a guitar and a drum.
I really don't think it's that much different, at least not to me. I think that in some way, like if you're in a band, then you have like a communication. So the drum to a guitar player is kind of foreign, or you say, I've got this idea for a beat, and then you let the drummer really like rock it out. But for me, in that situation, I already knew what my instruments were going to be. I wanted to have this harmonic spectrum generator at the center, and then I wanted to have two other sets of sine waves. So in that way, I don't think it's any different than, you know, whoever, like Beethoven or somebody was like, I've got a bunch of violins over here, and I want them to do this. And then there's another set of violins over here, and I want them to do that.
On the on a lot of the albums you've put out, you call yourself Dungeon Master, which I would say, and I'll acknowledge I know you a little socially, so I have a hint at this already, but I mean, it seems like a reference to Dungeons and Dragons.
It is, yeah.
So between computer as instrument and references to things like Dungeons and Dragons, you seem to gravitate toward a kind of inspiration that maybe Beethoven wouldn't have recognized.
I don't know. Maybe he would have liked Dungeons and Dragons.
He might have liked it, but he didn't know about it.
That's true. It's a funny little nickname that my friends started calling me that because I was their dungeon master and also was arranging music. And so they would be like, that's my dungeon master. And, you know,
can you explain what a dungeon master is?
Dungeon master is the person that sits on the other side of a book and invents a story that a bunch of other player characters roll dice and try to augment.
So the Dungeon Master is kind of like the composer of people and a story that they're making.
Yeah, and we're going to play tonight. 3 years going, and we're ending the quest hopefully soon.
So you're going to play the game.
The game, yes.
Let's hear another example of your music. This one is called Cicadas. Okay, what are all the little sounds we're hearing that are kind of reminiscent when put all together of cicadas, but maybe digital cicadas?
Well, that's what it was. Last year was the year, the 17-year cicada, and that's actually a collaborative project between me and my friend Sean Pruden, a.k.a. Young Sean. Check him out. He's doing a lot of the percussion stuff on there, which you can barely hear, but that's because they're so fast and so tiny. It all came from cicadas. We were sitting around outside recording them and then watching them on all sorts of data gathering devices, oscilloscopes and spectrum generators and that kind of thing, and then tried to recreate them in a harmonic way. So the instruments themselves are tiny little noise samples that are chopped and gated to be able to play quickly. And then there's also a Sega Genesis in there that was hacked up to make all those little like melodic sounds you heard.
So when you were the person who played the drums, did he play? He didn't play that fast. You made it that fast, or
he did? He did.
He did.
We both had computers that we synced together, and played all that stuff live. So he wasn't like pounding his finger out that fast. He composed them ahead of time, and then created like modulations and changes live.
And then when you hacked into a Sega Genesis, which is a game thingy. Yeah. Did you do that physically or through the software?
There's three stages with that one, because the Sega Genesis itself has a cartridge that is a ROM that someone programmed for me that I put in there. And then there's the second controller slot, which is an actual piece of hardware that changes MIDI data into machine code that the Sega Genesis can then read on the disc that's in the cartridge. So then the third stage is actually the computer, where I write out all the notes, like, you know, on a stave. And in this case, a lot of it was done through MIDI.
So people who are listening, I mean, for me, I am not someone who uses a computer to do anything other than like the bare minimum that I need it to. I don't necessarily understand how the computer is doing what I'm asking it to, because I don't need to understand that. So a lot of people are probably listening. They're like me and don't totally know what it is you're saying, but can pick up on the idea that you are doing something fairly complex and cerebral with stuff that a lot of people dismiss as not complex and not cerebral, like tools for video games or Dungeons and Dragons, or, you know, just even dismissing the computer itself on some level. Is that something that has come naturally to you, or is that kind of a deliberate philosophy?
I think it was a philosophy that I tried to avoid for a long time, and then I eventually embraced it.
What is that philosophy?
That everything can be an instrument, and that I want to be a composer, so I have to do that with the tools that are available.
How old are you?
35.
So starting a higher education, you've just been accepted into the UMKC Conservatory Program for Composition. Starting a higher education at that stage, it's not like, well, I'm 30-something years old, I guess I'll do what all the 30-somethings do and go to college now. I mean, it's a real choice at that stage. What do you think attending the conservatory will do for you as a composer?
Well, it'll do that. It'll teach me to be a real composer, because right now I feel like using a computer is kind of a stand-in for all of the instruments that I actually want to use, you know, which are violins and cellos and, you know, flutes and harps and things like that. The computer definitely is an instrument, but it's an instrument that I would like to see in the context of all of those other instruments. And, I mean, I have to go to school to learn it.
Were you daunted by the idea that this program had not previously accepted someone who had named the computer as their instrument?
Honestly, I didn't know that it hadn't been donned an instrument, but I did realize quickly, and so took that as, you know, the go.
Tell me about your audition.
In my mind, there were two auditions. There was the audition where I sent in several paper scores to be reviewed by the professors at the school, and then they also listened to the music that I made from those scores. And then there was the second audition, which was physical and in person.
So I want to bring in someone from the conservatory at this point. Paul Rudy is a professor of music composition, and he was at Tim's audition. He was there to evaluate whether this guy should be admitted into the composition program. And Paul, what were your thoughts during Tim's audition? Can you describe the audition for us?
Yeah, sure. It was totally unique from anything we've ever experienced before. He basically brought in a couple of well-used laptops, networked them together, was setting up some custom-made devices that he had built himself, setting up a couple of controllers, a keyboard, maybe a game controller or something. I actually don't remember everything because it was a whirlwind. We didn't have much time. By the time he had gotten everything set up, though, I had a clear sense that he knew his instrument well, not just because he had learned it, but because he had built it himself. And we had already heard his music. So it just confirmed or affirmed to me and to us that he had spent his 10,000 hours on this instrument already.
The amount of time required for mastery.
Yeah, yeah. That well-known figure that it takes, you know, just sitting there doing something long enough to really become a master of it. It became clear to us that he had that on this instrument.
What is the idea behind a composition student needing an instrument?
That goes all the way back to the beginning. It was only 10 years ago that a composition major coming into the conservatory had to still pass an instrumental or vocal audition to even get in the door.
Was it like a multiple choice of what instruments you could pick from, or just...
It was Western orchestral instruments and voice, which was great 100 years ago, 50 years ago even. But what we found was that was eliminating a lot of talented potential students that wanted to come work with us but just couldn't even get in the door at the conservatory.
People have been making music with computers for a long time. I actually was looking for articles on this and found like a very exciting article. I was thrilled to have found it. It was from Scientific American. It turns out it was from 1985. Why is this change just now making waves at the conservatory?
Because it's called a conservatory. There is a historical tradition and practice that has guided the conservatory. Not just our conservatory, but all schools of music, that is well-rooted in a long, long-standing practice. And those things are hard to change. And it takes, to me, it takes compelling students like Tim who clearly have mastery of something that falls outside of our established categories. And that's why I was so excited to encourage Tim to apply. Not only because he has this mastery, but he's also got a thirst for the best things that we have to offer, which is orchestral composition, instrumental chamber composition. You know, we're a well-known program for that. And it's not that he just wants to come in and become better at the computer. He's already got that covered, you know. And I would disagree when he says, I'm going to become a real composer. I would agree he's already a real composer. He's going to expand his toolbox, and we can help him with that. And so, to me, maybe he's the first one because he's kind of the perfect combination of a student who's already got a mastery, but not in what we have to offer. So I'm going to be learning from Tim, and that's the other cool thing about this. I have no idea how he does most of what he does. The computer is a vast instrument. There are so many different ways it can be used. Most of us hear most of the music we get probably through electronics of some kind. It's vast. I can't keep up with it. I have my own practice, but...
Which we'll talk about pretty soon. But,
yeah.
But I want to ask you another conservatory question,
sure.
Which is that I have heard that the conservatory approach to jazz is still based in a model for classical music education, which is, you know, obviously the roots of a conservatory, and that there's kind of a leftover challenge for jazz musicians in conservatories because classical music and jazz they're not just different in how they sound, they're also different in how they're made. I wonder if you see an analogy possibly here. I mean, do you anticipate there being those kinds of tensions as computers enter the program?
Possibly. Although I don't see tensions, I see opportunities for dialogue on how we can become more diverse. You know, diversity is a big issue right now, and racial diversity is part of that. But to me, aesthetic diversity is a more important question. And so that's what this helps us with.
when KCUR's Central Standard returns, more on the computer as a musical instrument. Do you think it's music? We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. We're here today with musician and UMKC music composition professor Paul Rudy, and with Tim Hart, the first student in the conservatory to be admitted with the computer as his instrument. Hi again, Tim.
Hi.
And hello, Paul.
Hi, Gina.
I want to hear some more music, but this time we're going to listen to Paul's music, because, Paul, you also are a composer who works with the computer.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Talk to me about your use of the computer and maybe how it differs from Tim's.
Well, it doesn't actually a lot, except that I don't build my own computer instruments like he does. I need a GUI that's already built. I need a graphic user interface. I don't want to build the instrument. I just want to use it. I just realized, thinking about this show, actually, that 80% of the music I perform now is actually performed on my laptop. I just did a theater show with UMKC Theater, and 70 to 80% of the music I played was on my laptop. I do sound meditations, and a lot of that's done from my laptop. So it's actually become my own personal instrument.
Why do you think that is?
Because I get to work directly with sound. When I notate music on paper, that's graphic art. It's not music. A score is not music.
There's like an intermediary step between you and the sound. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and there's a richness there working with other people to bring that music to life. And on the other hand, I like being able to work directly with sound. Like a sculptor wants to work with the block of wood, right? Not just draw it out on a piece of paper.
Well, let's hear some of your work. This, what we're about to hear, is called Death's Thin Melody. This has all the melancholy you would want in a song called Death's Thin Melody, for sure. But it has some other things, too. Like, what were those flapping sounds we were just hearing?
I think that was me just flapping a dried leaf bush somewhere out in the country. A lot of times, I have a huge database of sounds I've recorded from all over the world. So sometimes I don't actually remember where they came from myself.
I want to hear both you and Tim talking about, I mean, is that ability to record sounds and from the real world, from the field, and bring them into music, is that something that makes the computer an appealing instrument?
Well, for me, sometimes it can be a challenge and sometimes it's not, you know, because the gear that I'd like to use to record sounds sometimes when I'm like out in the field isn't available to me. On the other hand, sometimes I'll hear something that I want to imitate, like the cicadas that we listened to earlier. And so then I you know, formulate something, a plan to be able to recreate it. But that's just for me. You know, I'm not a good sampler when it comes down to like grabbing things on the field because I don't have the right tools.
You're more of a mimicker. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, like absolutely.
Recreating nature through digital tools.
And emulation. I often think of things as emulation, too.
What about you, Paul? I mean, we just heard that that's something you had done. But what does that offer that the orchestral piece of your background doesn't?
What it has to offer is the entire world as my instrument. So that opening sound you heard was a set of escalators in Arezzo, Italy, where Guido of Arezzo invented music notation 1,000 years ago, and these escalators were singing this beautiful song. Well, it would be really hard for me to duplicate that, maybe in the percussion section in the orchestra. But what it brings into my compositional suite is any sound that's made not just on our planet, but some of the space probes are sending back to us from outer space, too.
What would you say to someone who says that the composer or musician's work is to translate those sounds into the instruments that we know as musical instruments?
I would say that's one thing a composer can do, for sure. But that's only one thing of many that are possible.
Another quality of this song we just heard was really a very powerful emotional quality. How do you infuse the sounds that come from a computer with the emotional qualities of music? I think of the way that that happens on an instrument as having so much to do with the physical human manipulation of mm-hmm. that instrument, and that the human doing that has the emotion there. I mean, I don't know how you translate that to programming.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges, right? So when we see a performer, we see the kinetic energy that creates the sound. And when we listen to sound that's recorded, we don't have that same kinetic equation or that same kinetic prompt. So we have to build that into the music. And that's part of the artistry of working with digital music is building in that human connection, which takes a great deal of effort. But that's also the fun part of it, too.
Tim, is that something you strive to do?
Yeah, certainly. And also sometimes, like, break out of it, because I think that, like, you know, when you write for a really long time, then you start to fall into habits. And I sometimes have to, like, limit myself and then, like, break out of the emotional quality too, because sometimes it just seems so distant and then I like find my way back into it, and then other times I'm like, well, there's a beautiful chord, and then I just want to listen to that for 30 minutes, so I have to, like, you know, divide it and obscure it or something.
When you want to get out of what you're saying is a trap, I mean, do you see our association of music with emotion as kind of a limitation?
No, not necessarily, but I think that there's a long history of chords that are important because they like a minor chord or a major chord or something. They have a kind of like emotional resonance that's true. But
can you
I'm also
give an example?
Like the D major chord progression from that Pachelbel canon. You know, it's like the graduation song. So when you hear it, it has like an emotional resonance that's totally undeniable, and yet still, I feel like it's like so easy to fall into it, you know, when you're just sitting down, you're like, wow, that's a really cool melody. And the next thing you know, it's been written 150 times.
So it's kind of like the musical cliche.
I don't want to call it that, but, you know.
But what if I did?
Well, yeah, you know.
Tim Hart, congratulations on being
accepted
into UMKC's composition program at the conservatory with your instrument, the computer.
Yeah, thank you.
And Paul Rudy, professor of music composition, thanks for joining us from the UMKC Conservatory today.
Thanks for having me.
You can listen back to both of this morning's conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. Sign up for our podcasts while you're there, then all of this great content will just come right to you, whatever device you use. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, our attitudes toward marijuana changing in the Midwest. Tune in for that discussion at 10. That's tomorrow morning. You can join us anytime on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Special thanks to Maria Carter. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.